Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
It is 7:04 with the morning shift. Thanks for being here this morning on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. I'm Allie Mack with Mike Johnson, Bo Morgan, Dylan behind the glass, researching some controversy. This hour is brought to you by Zero Res. Book an appointment today with Zero Res, Atlanta's best carpet cleaning service. Quick headlines before you get to work. Blue Jays beat the Mariners last night, 13-4 in the ALCS. Mariners lead the series 2-1, game four is tonight, along with game three of the NLCS. Dodgers have a 2-0 lead on the Brewers. Florida Athletic Director Scott Strickland met with boosters on Tuesday. The result is that Gators coach Billy Napier could be fired as soon as this weekend. The Steelers are in Cincinnati to take on the Bengals tonight for Thursday night football. And in morning shift news, Dylan has pulled the audio of Throwback Thursday trivia, and we do have a discrepancy on who rang in first. Go ahead, Dylan. Model and Bring It On actress Gabrielle Union married
Mike.
Dylan.
Mike.
No.
Dwayne Wade.
I want you to cut that, and we're listening to it in the break.
I clearly beat you.
It's just not true.
Mike.
I think it's a clear tie. Yeah, here's the thing. You just went straight Hugh Freeze afterwards.
Whoa, hold on.
You complained on the way into halftime, and then you fell apart in second.
Hold on a second.
There was no yards gained.
First off, if you think it's a tie, why did you say it was Mike's?
Because it sounded like Mike just barely got you. But listening, in real time, it sounded like Mike just barely got you. But now, listening back to it, I will at least admit it was a tie. Listen to it.
Mike.
It's the difference between the B sound and the M sound.
Absolutely.
That's all it is.
That's all it is. You can hear it, whichever one you want to hear first.
Let me tell you something.
Tell us. I love when you do this.
You just have flat out lied multiple times on this show. You lied earlier about being a Bengals fan, and you're lying right now. There's no. First off, you said definitively earlier it was Mike. Now we have audio where it's clear that it's me, and you're saying it's you.
I deserve the tiebreaker after the one before. Clearly, it was me.
Bo, it's clear as you. This is as clear as it's you. Is as clear Auburn fumbled at the goal line.
There you go. Hugh freezed it. I'm telling you.
What are you talking about?
He complained on the interview on the way into halftime.
You can hear my name first.
Does it make anyone feel better to know this would not change the outcome of the game?
Momentum changed.
Oh,
that's what I said. Hugh freezed it.
Momentum sport.
He knew at halftime.
You know what? Let's talk important things other than Dylan not understanding who we heard first.
Yeah. We've got a masterclass about to go down when it comes to film review. We are sizing up the 49ers for Sunday because, obviously, Mike played for the Falcons. Bo has worked and traveled with the team for years, so they know what to focus on when it comes to looking at the 49ers tape, which they did this morning. And you guys covered the injuries earlier, the uncertainty surrounding the quarterback position. What else caught your eyes about the 49ers offense?
Well, I think that when you look at it, we talked a little bit earlier. I went ahead and looked it up because I was talking about how bad their run game is. And, Bo, you said they're ranked, 30th in the NFL in terms of yards per game?
Yeah,
is that what you said?
They're averaging 82 a game.
Okay, I went up and looked up the success rate, which, okay, for anybody that doesn't follow success rate, it's did you get half the yards to gain on first down? I think it's the same on second down, and then did you convert on third down? It might even be a little bit different on second down. But offensive success rate when you run the ball is a big thing. They're second to last in the league in offensive success rate when they're running the ball. They sit at 34.8%. The Bengals are the only team worse in the NFL at offensive success rate when they're rushing the football. And I see that on film. We talk about zone, the Shanahan zone tree, which we've talked about. McVay now has turned that into duo. We've covered that till we're blue in the face, that they are more of a duo team, a north and south, push you off kind of it's not inside zone, it's a gap style still. Well, what I've seen, and we watched this earlier, Bo and I were watching the tape, they've turned into a counter gap scheme style of offense out in San Francisco. A lot of pulling guard, a lot of Juszczyk that being utilized like Charlie Warner on the GH counter and things like that. They're different than they used to be, and it's not clicking. And I'm curious to see how we decide to defend those kind of things because we are a little bit, you know, light in the butt when it comes to our defensive front. So if they do have some success moving us, then you start having to go side to side, run some of the twist stunts up front the same way we did in the fourth quarter against the Buffalo Bills. But it's just that for whatever reason, they have not had much success on the ground. And it's crazy because of all the injuries they've had, Christian McCaffrey is one guy that has stayed relatively healthy throughout the season.
Well, you look at his numbers and he's much more prolific in the passing game right now, which makes sense because they lead the league in passing. But it's like Bijan's got 480. Let's see. Bijan has 484, I was right, on the ground and 338 through the air is receiving. McCaffrey's are flipped. He's got 336 rushing, and he's only getting to 3 yards a carry, which is what you're talking about with the success rate and some of that's in play of it. But he's got 400 and almost 50 yards receiving. They're using him more as a receiver this year, success-wise, than they are.
Yeah.
But you know, you look at Pearsall's been on and off the field. You know, Kendrick Bourne has been pretty good for them, but Juwan Jennings has been on and off the field. Like Kittle has been gone. Will they get Kittle back? I think Kittle makes their rushing game better automatically.
I agree.
He is such a, you know, when it was the debate a few years ago, is it Kittle or Kelce? Who's the best tight end in the league? I always went towards Kittle because I thought he was more complete. You know, Kelce, I think, is a better route-running tight end. But Kittle, to me, is a better run-blocking tight end and does enough in the passing game to make him in that conversation where I thought he was the better overall. You know, but the Purdy thing comes into play, too. I feel like they're a more pass-happy team with Mac Jones in there than with Purdy.
Well, and you guys have been really good about mentioning how Sunday is going to be kind of a family affair. All these guys have worked together before, but Jeff Ulbrich talked with the media and said things are not the same.
In a lot of ways, it's almost nothing compared to what it was here. Like the way he grows on a yearly basis and how he evolves, it doesn't feel necessarily like the same system. Like you think of Kyle, but you think of his last name, Shanahan, you think of play pass, you think of keepers and boots and outside zone and it's not that anymore. Does that exist? For sure it does, you know, but that's not that used to be the staples. That used to be Mama. That used to be the stuff that he would do every game and in high volume, and you're seeing less and less of that. You see more drop back. You see more designer drop back. You see way more motion. You see way more window dressing to everything that he's doing. From the run game perspective, it's way more it's way more technical, and it's a challenge. It's another one where you really better take a hard look at yourself, Scout, when you go up against Kyle Shanahan, because he's going to look really hard at the way you've been beat, the way you've been attacked, and you better make sure that everything that's been put on tape has been resolved.
That's what we talked about earlier. Well, I think Mike, you explained it in the run game. That's what I'm trying to say. He kind of said some of what I'm trying to say. The difference in Mac Jones is they're not going to boot as much. You know, I saw like a little half boot earlier when we were watching film. I think Purdy brings more into that. But that's what we talked about earlier in that 620 segment. I said the Jon Snow they've Jon Snow the offense, yeah. Which you know Game of Thrones. You know what that means? It's you can call it kind of evolving. But it's basically taking that system and twisting it into what you like your preference, which all the motions and stuff. That's what O'Connell, that's what McVay have done in some ways. I think it's just the evolution of the personnel and how defenses have adjusted to stay ahead of them.
Yeah, and I think that you bring up a couple of good points. First and foremost, we did turn on the film, and very early in the game, you saw them run the outside zone from under center, which we, as much as we run wide zone, we don't run it from under center, which is kind of really interesting. I mean, that's the old Mike Shanahan wide zone that you saw for so many years where the quarterback is sprinting, arm extended, almost can't get to the, to the handoff point. So seeing a little bit of that was fun. Christian McCaffrey, though, doesn't look extremely comfortable running wide zone, and the exterior blockers that they have, and you mentioned the fact that George Kittle's been out, they don't look comfortable blocking the outside zone at tight end spot. So that's one of the reasons they've gone to gap. And, you know, the Jon Snow thing, a good coach in the NFL, they play to what their strengths are. And I think that Kyle Shanahan obviously is one of those guys that looks at his offense, looks at Trent Williams, looks at Juszczyk, you know, looks at some of the other guys that are involved, and they go, hey, this is what we can do well. Let's do that. It's exactly what Zach Robinson has done here in Atlanta. He got here. What were we good at? Wide zone. All right. You had Chris Lindstrom. You had Jake Matthews. You had all these guys that could run wide zone. And he said, okay, this is perfect. Let's just do this. And then we can build off of that. And that's exactly how this offense has kind of come to fruition.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, you know how much we used Charlie Warner in the pass protection game? They had a set, Mike, where they tried to use Luke Farrell, who's their rookie, not a rookie, but he's a fifth-year player out of Ohio State at tight end, and they had to use him in a pass set.
Yeah.
That for whatever reason, I can't tell you what their blocking scheme was and their pass protection. That's a Mike Johnson question. But Trent Williams kind of takes an inside rusher, and they brought Jamil Dean on a DB blitz.
Right.
And he literally dipped his shoulder and ran right around Luke Farrell. And Luke Farrell looked like he had no clue what was coming. If they try to use Farrell on anybody in our blitz package, I feel very good about it.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because I was curious where we kind of stood now in terms of blitz rate after blitzing so much last weekend. How about this? Number one in the NFL blitz rate, 41.8%. Number one in the NFL. And blitz rate. So they'll have that to contend with. I got plenty more stats about how good these quarterbacks are when they're being blitzed. And of course, we got to get to it throughout the show. It's good stuff. We got a lot of stuff.
And whoever we get, Mac Jones is battling some rib injuries, and he's mobile, but he's not as mobile as Brock Purdy, I think. And Brock Purdy's probably, he could be limited with that toe and stuff. So, like, I think you're going to want to kind of heat him up.
When we're going to get more into these stats, talk more in depth at 8:20. I am curious who you both think the X factor will be for the Falcons defense. I'll be at 8:20. This Friday, 92.9 is in Athens ahead of Saturday's big game between Georgia and Ole Miss. Join Dukes and Bell at Grindhouse on Lumpkin Street for a special broadcast from 2 to 6. They're going to have special guests plus a preview of all the weekend's pro and college football action. It's Friday, 2 to 6 at Grindhouse on Lumpkin Street in Athens. And coming up next, Brian Branch appealed his punishment. It was quickly upheld. We'll get into that and more of what's happening around the NFL next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
7:24 with the morning shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. I'm Allie Mack with Mike Johnson, Bo Morgan, Dylan behind the glass catching heat for his referee skills today. Use the Odyssey app.
Don't let him talk to you like that, Dylan.
You can use the Odyssey app to go back to 6:40 if you want to hear Throwback Thursday trivia. We do have mic'd up coming up momentarily, and there's a whiteboard.
Yeah,
and all kinds of things happening in the studio right now.
Go time. Bo, the broker, and Mutual Fund Mike are back in action today. So that's all you need to know.
All right. I'm very excited to hear it.
We retired divesting Dylan, so.
I still don't think that's a word. But
pretty sure it's a word.
Divesting?
I don't know if retired is the right word either, because I had no recollection or I had no news of this.
Well, you just heard it.
Well, we're about to go in the huddle, preview the 40-year-olds matchup tonight, but Sports Talk on the Game is presented by Paramount Plus. You can't count on much, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Watch your local NFL game live every Sunday all season long. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today.
I thought it was 7:40 already.
I did too.
I was like, why is that? That's not mic'd up.
I'm glad you thought that, because I thought the same thing.
You brought the whiteboard in and my mind went to 7:40.
I did too.
And then I thought I didn't let Mike tease his mic'd up.
Yeah.
I even ran in there to grab a marker because I was like
NFL.
And
good.
And then I saw Allie make a face. I was like, wait, did I do something wrong? I was like, what happened?
No. We're all confused, but we're definitely in the huddle at 7:26. So Thursday night football is tonight. It is Thursday, right?
That's right.
Okay. Yeah. Tonight is an AFC North rivalry between the Steelers and Bengals. It's the third regular season game between quarterbacks over 40 years old with Aaron Rodgers and Joe Flacco.
And we talked about this at the pregame show, Bo. Have you changed your mind about Mike Tomlin at all? For anybody that didn't pay attention to this, Mike Tomlin went to the podium. He said he had an issue. He said that Andrew Berry, the GM of the Browns, must be a lot smarter than he is because trading a starting week one quarterback to an in-division rival in the middle of the season just didn't sound like a good idea. Now, he said he was kind of joking, you know, the whole thing, but the point still stands. You traded Joe Flacco to a team that was quarterback needy, and now the Steelers are playing them in prime time.
My opinion has not changed because metric-wise, if you want to go by that, which a lot of people tend to do these days with the analytics and stuff, he's like the worst quarterback in the league that was a starter. And his verbiage was, if you thought enough of him to make him your week one starter. And I just think it's unfair because, well, who the hell else were they supposed to start? Yeah, you know, like they didn't really – it wasn't like Cleveland had a real – you know, real choice on who they were starting. It was start a veteran or start either Dylan Gabriel or Shador Sanders.
Right.
And they clearly didn't want to do have one of those guys starting. So it's kind of, I understand the sentiment because I'd be irritated too if somebody traded within a division. But the reality is it's not like they traded anyone of substance. Joe Flacco is there just to see if they could catch lightning in a bottle. And it's not like they traded, you know, a top-tier starter in the league these days.
Yeah, did you shocked at all that Pittsburgh's only a 4.5-point favorite?
No, because division.
Yeah, and it is a road game too. So
you just know, like, crazy things happen. I don't know how many times, and I know you're not necessarily. I don't know how many times we have to explain to people that in-division games in the NFL are ridiculously crazy, and anything, there's just wild stuff can happen.
Yeah. It is nuts.
Lions safety Brian Branch appealed his one-game suspension for his harder-than-a-slap to Juju Smith-Schuster on Monday night. NFL VP John Runyan wrote in a letter to Brian explaining your conduct reflected poorly on the NFL and has no place in our game.
I mean, cosign, right? Cosign. I agree. We can talk all day about what led up to it, but you just can't do that. The open hand, I'm going to call it an open hand punch. Bo called a slap yesterday.
B-slap.
It's a good way to go about it. Clearly there's no place for it in the game, and you can't do that. I think everything that was supposed to happen after this has fallen into place for me.
I think my only issue is that Juju was not fined or even there was nothing, not even warned about the blindside block. I'm with you. I just think that that's a move you've made, a block you've made illegal in the game. You came down hard on people in the game, and because it's a little wide receiver that did it to a DB, and because the DB responded, did retaliate, the only person is it's the who hit who first thing, and whoever hits you last is the one that gets caught. But I don't think there's anything in the game for that. If you're taking the play out, officiated that way.
Let me ask it from this angle, just so we're all clear, because I don't know how I feel about this. Had it happened immediately after the play, do you think we're dealing with the same consequence?
Probably.
Because I can't think of a precedence right here of like the in-game punch. I know there's been
probably
quite a few
not,
of them.
But you got to remember when. Probably not, but why are you putting me over here? In Brian Branch's defense, they're trying to get the ball back. It's late in the game, and he held his emotions in check.
Oh, you're saying so he was smart.
To not cost his team.
Okay. All right. Boy.
However, he could not hold those same emotions in check after the
gripping
game.
Gripping that shovel and digging
Brian,
that hole
if
over
you need
there.
A lawyer, you got Bo over here.
Nah, I mean, yeah. Better call Saul.
Let me tell you something. Hey, he'll fight the battles, and I'll argue him for
it. And truth be told, I think you bring up a valid point. So it is what it is, but it is – I think, like I said, everything kind of fell into place.
Chiefs wide receiver Rashee Rice was back at practice and is expected to play against the Raiders after finishing his six-game suspension.
I can't remember who retweeted it. It was either Schefter or Rappaport that they were retweeting a video of him kind of doing workouts during the suspension and everything else that was going on. Looked pretty good. Not going to lie. Like, it was like, and I think whoever retweeted it gave it the side eye emoji. Like, ooh, that's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you think about what he could be their offense, but they've started literally hitting a cylinder here, or a gear, I guess, as you say. And it could really take Kansas City and kind of elevate them back to where we think of them. The only issue in any of this for me has been these free number four shirts and campaigns on social media by players, which I think is just utterly ridiculous and tone deaf. And, personally, there should be a talking to those guys. It's like, you gotta read the room.
Yeah, spot on.
Vikings QB J.J. McCarthy's high right ankle sprain is getting there. Not 100%, and head coach Kevin O'Connell hasn't named a starter yet for their game on Sunday against the Eagles, but he did indicate it will be Carson Wentz to make his fourth start.
If there are any Vikings fans listening right now, and I know a couple of them that do listen to the show from time to time, I want to know how you would feel if and when J.J. McCarthy is inserted back in this lineup. Because I just can't imagine let's just put the fan base aside for a minute. Can you imagine him stepping in front of the team and being like, hey, J.J.'s going to be our starter this weekend? Not that anybody would hate it, but I think that there would be a large contingent of that team that's like, oh, man, like, really? And not that Wentz is MVP caliber, but, God, J.J. was awful.
Yeah, but I also think he played two games in the NFL. He played two games as a starter in the NFL. Two regular season games is always played. One of them you won, the other one of them you won and you were able to get the offense going because you ran the football well late and then he made some plays. The other he was terrible. And then he got hurt late in that game. And so, I mean, you're gonna give up on a first round draft pick after two games?
I'm not giving up on him.
I know you're not giving up, but like I think at some point you got to figure out what you have, and maybe O'Connell does have time because of I think he's one of the best head coaches in the league.
Yeah, I agree.
And offensive minds, and he does great with quarterbacks too. Look, I heard somebody give him credit for Daniel Jones this year because Daniel Jones, listen to me for a second, because Daniel Jones went up there just like Baker went to L.A. and he worked. Yeah, you're in that system, but I think Shane Steichen should get a lot of credit for Daniel Jones, just like I think Dave Canales gets a lot of credit for Baker. So
what you're talking about is like us giving Zach Robinson credit for Baker Mayfield. It's like, oh, you remember when they spent a couple weeks together?
I understand.
Like, no.
I understand, but I think just being around people that do things differently and prepare differently and can help.
Yeah, I agree.
Coming up, we're going to shift gears a little bit to college football. Someone's hot seat just started to boil.
It's
and
on fire.
Now I'll tell you, we've got a mic'd up on the way.
That's right. Mutual Fund Mike and Bo the Broker are back. We're going to talk about Heisman's odds. Are we buying? Are we selling? Are we holding? All right. I got the whiteboard out, dry erase markers. It's going to be a big deal. Don't miss it.
That's next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah. Thanks for joining us this morning on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. It is the morning shift. We're all clocked in. I'm Allie Mack with Mike Johnson, Bo Morgan, and this segment is presented by John Foy and Associates. Experienced personal injury attorneys get the strong arm. Now we have mic'd up coming up momentarily.
Yeah.
It's very exciting. I do have to mention, I know, Bo, you don't like the idea of AI. It's not going to take over the world because I've been trying to get it to tell me how many Bijan Robinson jerseys have been sold since Monday. They don't know.
Yeah.
AI doesn't know.
But does anybody know?
No. I was going to say,
I don't know if this is an AI problem or just a humanity issue.
No, it's the NFL Players Association. They release a top 50 player sales list weekly, but it tracks like a longer period of time. But I'd love to find that out.
Like if there was a spike in the graph.
Yeah, I would love to see it.
I don't know. Maybe we can ask our buddy Shannon Joyner. You know what I mean?
Oh, he would have better insight.
What's the spike?
Yeah.
Tell us about this.
Yes. So we talked about this a little bit earlier. Florida Athletic Director Scott Strickland met with a handful of influential boosters on Tuesday. Basically, they're ready to cut Billy Napier. Could be fired as soon as this weekend. Certainly will not survive another loss. Now, if they go this route, Billy's buyout would be $21 million to be paid in installments, 50% of the money paid within 30 days of separation.
Doesn't it just feel like rip the Band-Aid off, man? Like, what are we doing?
Yeah, I thought Billy did a great job last year saving his job.
because it's not great job coaching. It's a great job doing just enough to save your job at the right time.
Yeah, and then I thought this year, I had a lot of high hopes this year. Lagway, you signed Dallas Wilson, who's a stud. And you see the Texas game, and I'm like, well, look what Dallas Wilson does this offense, and look how good they look.
Yep.
And then I saw last week where he gets everybody, like, former players, everybody's like, oh, high school offense. And I'm like, I think that's so derogatory. And I feel like it's not giving a guy credit. And then I watched
people used to say the same thing when Urban was hired.
Well, yeah. There was a guy that now works in Philly who said Urban Meyer would never win anything in the SEC, and he dominated
high school offense.
Yeah. But then I watched last week, and I watched them play A&M, and it was just bang your head against the wall stuff. Perimeter, like out here and like the flat stuff passing, nothing downfield. And then you get the second, and then you got Austin Barber. They put him on an island with Cassius Halishaw, and it's the same thing every time. Either I'm trying to speed rush by you, which he got by half the time, and the time that Barber was quick enough to get there, he did a crossover move and beat him back to the inside.
Yeah.
And it was just like, and Billy wouldn't help him. And I say Billy because he's the one calling plays.
Yeah. Well, and I think to kind of bring this all full circle real quick before we get it mic'd up, this is why I was so appreciative of Zach Robinson in the second half against Buffalo. When Michael Jarrell is brought in at left tackle in place of Jake Matthews, screen, misdirection, another screen, like play action pass. Like they did so many things to try not to leave Michael Jarrell on an island, because obviously he hasn't played a snap for the Falcons, period. And he comes in and he plays left tackle against Joey Bosa, and it's like, we're not going to put you in a bad spot. That's what Billy Napier, the attack that he probably should have had.
Absolutely. And look, say what you want, but the defense is playing at a freaking championship level. They didn't look as good against A&M as they have in the previous weeks. But you have to remember how non-existent the offense, other than the Texas game, the offense has been non-existent, and their defense has kept them in every single game until, late in the Miami game, they kind of pulled away. Late in the A&M game, they pulled away. It's just been bad, and they have such talent. It's very frustrating. It is time to rip the Band-Aid off, and I am not the fire. I mean, you guys know this. If you've listened to me in this town for however many years I've been doing it, on and off as producing and on air, I'm not a fire the coach guy.
Well, and you can't feel too bad for him. Within 30 days, he'll get $10.5 million. So he'll
work.
Can you imagine being the booster that says, "I want you to fire that guy. I don't care if it costs me $11 million out of
my
pocket."
That's nice, huh?
Insane. This Saturday from noon until 2, I want to invite you to join me at Jim Shorkey Kia of Gainesville as we get ready for Sunday's big game. One lucky fan will win the ultimate tailgate kit. It's a 50-inch 4K smart TV with rolling stand and other prizes. And another winner will take home tickets to an upcoming home game. It's this Saturday, noon to 2, at Jim Shorkey Kia of Gainesville with me and Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
And as a reminder, today's mic'd up. I'm cracking up at something right now. I'm about to tell you what it is. Brought to you by Buffalo's Cafe. Come wing your family style at one of Buffalo's Cafe's 13 Atlanta locations. I had to Google the word divest to know if it actually was a real word. It's the whole I'm not a smart man, but I know what love is kind of thing, the Forrest Gump. I'm not smart enough to know what divest means, but it is funny. It's kind of ironic. The definition of divest is to deprive someone of power or rights. So, yeah, Divest Dylan. We did. That's exactly what happened. You're like, divesting Dylan's not playing today, and he's not. And so we have actually divested Dylan.
I have, in fact, been divested.
We have, in fact, been divested. So that was kind of funny to keep track of. All right, last week we did this. Last week we did this, and I mentioned it. Bo the Broker, Mutual Fund Mike. Mm-hmm. We're talking about quarterbacks. We're talking about Heisman odds in college football. So I have pulled 11 of the top quarterbacks in the country in terms of Heisman odds. All right, we're going to kind of track these over the next following weeks. These are the odds after week 7 that I'm going to give you today. Before we get to these, I just want to point something out because we've been following this since training camp. You know what names are not on this board? Garrett Nussmeier, Cade Klubnik, DJ Lagway, Lenore Sellers. What else you got?
Arch Manning,
not on the board.
I don't know why I'm laughing. I'm not laughing out of anger. No,
it's laughing at the business that we're in, because how many people do we have on here talk about Penn State winning a national title and Arch Manning winning? It's ridiculous.
And guess what? You know what the most ridiculous thing about it is? That Arch Manning's name isn't even on it after he finally falls off, and he literally just had his best game of his career as a college player and the biggest win of his college career.
Yeah. All right, so let's break into it. And what we're going to do here, this is not a fair or foul. This also does include, like, the fine. So we're going to do – you can either buy stock, you can sell stock, or you can just hold. You don't have to do either one. You can just stay flatline on this. But we're going to kind of break into some of these. I don't want to just go straight from the top and get the favorites in. But we are going to start with number one on the list right now, because it is Carson Beck at the University of Miami, who is the favorite in the Heisman conversation at plus 300. They have a scary Friday night game against Louisville. That's, think of just a couple of Fridays ago when Florida State falls. Like, those Friday night games can get a little bit weird. Yeah. Bo, are you buying or selling on Carson Beck?
I'm holding on my stock because it is in, if it was in Louisville, I would be terrified and I would sell my stock. But I'm going to hold it because I just think Miami's going to trip. This should be a game that they trip in, but I'm not sold that they are on this one.
Yeah, they'll be 13.5-point favorites going to this weekend. I'm with you. I'm actually going to hold on Carson Beck as well. I don't think Carson Beck's going to win the Heisman. I'm just not sure this is the week that he kind of falls back in the board just a little bit. All right, let's go a little bit further down. How about Trinidad Chambliss, the Ole Miss quarterback who has skyrocketed up the boards? He's only made, what, 2 starts now for Ole Miss? But he sits at plus 2,500 on the board. Bo, I'll let you go first on this one. Big matchup against Georgia this weekend.
I think I'm buying on Trinidad Chambliss because, look, this is a game for Lane Kiffin. It can get him paid a lot of money.
Yeah.
And he beat him last year. I think this is a get-back game, though, for Georgia. But I like what he's done for their offense. I'm going to buy.
Yeah. I am selling in terms of what I'm going to see this weekend. I might buy later on in the year, but to me, you go to Georgia, you play Georgia's defense. Not saying that they can't be taken advantage of, and Ty Simpson, who we'll talk about in just a minute, did have a good night in the same situation, but I'm going to have to see it to believe it. He's a much better runner, I think, at this point than a passer, although he's a very good player. I just think that those odds are going to tumble just a little bit after this weekend, just a small bit. All right, so that's where we're at. That's Carson Beck, Trinidad Chambliss. How about let's go down to Joey Aguilar, plus 4,000 on the board. They will be headed to Tuscaloosa to face off with Alabama. Alabama's defense, not like what you think of in the past in Nick Saban, but Joey Aguilar has had his ups and downs this year. I think he's been better than we thought he would, though.
I don't really have any stock because I never bought it, so I'll sell. I'm not. I think he's been better. You're right. I think he's been better. I totally agree with you. But I think this Alabama defense is sneaky good, and I think they've gotten better each week, which is impressive to me.
Yeah.
I thought what they did last week at Missouri was pretty impressive, honestly. For, you know, look, that's not an easy place to play at the time, and the coach has always got something up his sleeve.
Yeah, I completely agree with what you're saying. I'm just holding right now. I'm going to hold on Joey Aguilar plus 4,000. Just kind of is what it is. I agree with a lot of what your sentiment was, but I'm not so sure that he doesn't have one of those nights where he looks good. Maybe the run game doesn't. You know what I mean? And he has like a couple big first down pickups, and maybe it ends up like a 3-point game for them. So that'll be fun to kind of keep track of. All right, speaking of that conversation, how about we flip over and talk about Ty Simpson? He is second in the clubhouse right now, plus 320. Alabama's quarterback coming off 3 straight ranked wins. I don't think the offense played incredibly well last weekend. Ty Simpson, though, continues to be that guy. I'll go first on this one. I am holding on Ty Simpson right now. I think that the reason I'm holding is because he is so far up the board. Like, if he was back down at like a plus 3,000 or something like that, I'd be like, oh, bye. But I think that, like all these guys, at some point they're going to have a hiccup. Ty Simpson, to me, probably won't overtake Carson Beck after this weekend unless Carson Beck just absolutely tumbles.
I'm buying. I think he could. I think if he shows out in the there's a nickname, but the third Saturday in October.
Third Saturday in October.
Let me tell you something. He goes out and plays well against Tennessee at 7 o'clock at Bryant-Denny Stadium on a Saturday night with a national audience. Mm. And at the end, all of the clips and the pictures are him, that victory cigar that they have when they beat Tennessee.
Come on.
If that moment plays out and Carson Beck ho-hums against Louisville at home, absolutely he'll rise up that board.
All right, I want to get to at least two more of these. Let's start with Haynes King, the Georgia Tech quarterback, plus 3,000 right now on the board. I don't know if you've looked at this or not. Duke is favored in this game. Duke is favored in this game this weekend. It's that noon start time. It's at Wallace Wade Stadium. Haynes King, to me, though, is just too good. Like, I'm buying on Haynes King at plus 3,000. That's too deep down the board, sitting at, I think he's 10th best odds just in terms of the overall Heisman. You do have a running back or two that are in the mix. But I'm buying on Haynes King, man. I think that this is another game that you can go get that obviously Vegas doesn't think you can, and you can prove the doubters wrong.
Well, now it is a point and a half, and you get three for being at home, right? So it's pretty tight there. I'm buying. Here's the thing. Here's the reason why you buy on Haynes King. Because unless there's an injury, Haynes King is going to get – he's going to produce numbers, win or lose.
Yes.
It's almost to the point where at times I don't think Haynes King, since he's been at Georgia Tech, you can – how many times has he been the reason they lost?
Yeah, that's a good point, unless it's been an injury. You are spot on about that. All right, and then let's finish. Let's go with Gunnar Stockton at plus 2,200. Obviously, big matchup with them. I think Ole Miss's defense is a little bit underrated, and obviously Rusty's going to come in with us in just a minute and talk about all the things with this game coming on this weekend. But Gunnar Stockton plus 2,200. I'll let you go first.
You think he brought biscuits this time?
Might have.
I doubt
Burberry it. Biscuits?
We haven't heard from him, so probably not.
You would have already brought them in.
I'm selling.
Wow.
Because Gunnar Stockton, I think, has a. I think Gunnar Stockton is a good player. I think he'd be really good. But they're in the inefficiency of the offense is it rears it rear. Do you think? I mean, Auburn's defense is good, but they're not as good as they made Georgia look bad in the first half of that game.
I think that's a fair point. I'm actually buying here on Gunnar Stockton. I think that Heismans are made of moments. He's already had the one with the throw against Tennessee. I think that this is another game this weekend that could lead to a moment. I don't know that it's going to be like extreme efficiency and then he goes 22 of 28, but you can see him picking up a big first down with his legs at some point in that game, making some kind of incredible throw. You know Georgia's going to be in it. I mean, it's not like even if they lost, they don't ever lose bad.
Yeah.
But I think Gunnar Stockton could possibly have one of those moments where you look at him and you go, man, I just don't know plus 2,200 is high enough, so I'm buying.
I hear you. I just think that there are others that have had already more moments, and there's just been too much pedestrian stuff. Moments don't overcome numbers in the end.
That's fair.
We will see what happens. And coming up, yes, we've got the Rusty Mantell, co-owner and publisher for Dogs HQ, joining us next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.